This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The Illegal Curve Saturday Spotlight.
Pleased to be joined in studio now by the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. You hear him on TSN 3. You hear him occasionally here on TSN 1290. Gracious enough to join us in studio after that road trip. Got back late last night. Dennis Bayak.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis. Thanks for doing this.
You're very, very welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, before we get into your career and the, your fascinating career in the NHL and in hockey in general, good road trip for the Winnipeg Jets, obviously.
Yeah, it really was. You know, come back with 5 of 6 points. Boston's not an easy place to pick up a point. They did that. And yes, Boston's banged up. Jets were minus some guys as well. But a good road trip. You know what? This has been a good road team, and the question is always asked, what makes them a good road team? And Paul Maurice is adamant that it's not as much they were a good road team as they were playing good hockey at a time when the schedule had them on the road. So that's the way they look at it. And now they get a couple of well-earned days off, and then the schedule picks up again with, I think it's 6 and 11 days starting on Wednesday. But, hopefully Brian Little's okay.
Yeah.
That's the question mark going forward because he was playing so well with that line. But, good road trip.
That's exactly right. We'll blame the snow in Winnipeg on you. It was snowing in Boston when you guys got there, if I'm not mistaken.
Not as much as we thought, though. When we were leaving Buffalo to go to Boston, there was a storm system that was supposed to go through and dump like 4, 5, 6 inches, according to the newscast down there, on Boston. When we got there that night after the Buffalo game, it was raining, and it had snowed a little bit, but it was all gone. The next morning, there was a little bit, but even the next morning, not as much as everybody thought there was going to be. So, no, it was fine.
So then by tomorrow morning, the snow will all be gone here as well.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, perfect.
And the sun will be shining, which it is now. So, you know what? As long as the wind stays down, it's not bad out there right now.
It's not. And for a guy born in Winnipegosis, Manitoba,
exactly,
grew up on a farm in the Rice Lake area. I mean, this is obviously something you're used to. Elementary school in Rice Lake. Graduate from the Winnipegosis Collegiate Institute. And if I make any mistakes, by all means, correct my record. But you began your broadcasting career in 1970 with CFAR Radio in Flin Flon, and you quickly became the play-by-play man for the famous Flin Flon Bombers. What was it like calling games for such a team with such a storied history, and what do you remember most about it?
Well, I remember being nervous, certainly when the first game rolled around. That's something that I always wanted to do. There was no guarantees when I went there that that was going to happen. They had a situation there where a gentleman by the name of Bruce Keddy, who was the sports editor, he also handled the play-by-play duties because he was on the road with the team, and it was just easier to do it that way. And then eventually, I think CFAR progressed to the point where they said, you know what, we'll get our own person doing these games. And I got the opportunity, and it kind of went from there. But, it's Patty Ganell for the old-time hockey people like myself. A name that is very synonymous with the Flin Flon Bombers. Spent a lot of time up there, and there was always this aura about the Flin Flon Bombers that when you go up there, you better have your big boy boxers on because it's not going to be an easy game, and it's not going to be an easy series, and it wasn't. But tons of fun up there, and I got to do everything that there was to do in radio, and I think maybe that was the best part. I was a DJ. I did commercials, I did programming, I did production, did sports, did news, everything that was needed. And I think that was a really good experience for me.
When you started in radio, did you know that you wanted to do play-by-play? Did you know that sports broadcasting is where you wanted to go? Or were you just sort of seeing as where the road unfolds?
No, I knew exactly where I wanted to go. Whether I was going to get there or not, remained to be seen, obviously. But when my brother and I would play ball hockey, I was the goaltender and the play-by-play guy. And there were 6 teams in the National Hockey League, and you knew everybody. You knew the line combinations, and away you went from there. So, and it was funny, when I went to Flin Flon and did my audition, They had me read a newscast and a sportscast, and then they played it back to me, and they could immediately tell the interest was much higher when I got to the sportscast than what it was to the newscast. So I knew pretty much that's what I wanted to do. Again, whether it was ever going to work out or not, I didn't know at that time, but it all worked out, and away we went from there.
How many years in Flin Flon?
I went on a two-year run everywhere, trying to keep ahead of the bill collectors. I spent 2 years in Flin Flon. Got a call one morning from a radio station and TV station in Saskatoon, CFQC. Went there for 2 years. I mentioned Paddy Ginnell. In the meantime, Paddy Ginnell went from Flin Flon, bought the Victoria Cougars. He called me and said, would you come out and work for me? So I technically got out of the broadcast business for a couple of years. I went to work for the team. I still did the play-by-play, but I also did sales and marketing and travel arrangements and those sorts of things. And then he was selling the team, happened to be going back through Saskatoon the day the sports director announced that he was leaving to go to a sales job at another media outlet. And they said to me, do you want your old job back plus being sports director? And I knew that Paddy Ginnell was selling the team, and the guy that was buying the team maybe had somebody who was going to do my job. So I took the opportunity and went back to Saskatoon, back to CFQC. So and then from there I branched out into hockey and things like that.
We'll get to your time in Saskatoon. Did you have a mentor, a broadcasting mentor, growing up in Flin Flon?
Well, you know what? I think the Bob Cole, to me, Bob Cole in his heyday was still the best that there was. I mean, Danny Gallivan was outstanding. The Hewitts always had that distinct voice. So those were the national ones. We got a little bit of Dan Kelly from the U.S. market as time wore on. But certainly the Canadian guys, Danny Gallivan, Bob Cole, the Hewitts, those were the ones that I grew up with. And then locally, Lou Hill, who worked at CKDM in Dauphin, which was 30 miles or, 40 kilometers from where I grew up, and spent a lot of time. But I was kind of a radio nut when it came to sports. The cold nights in the winter, it's amazing on AM, on the AM band, how much you can pick up.
Sure.
And, I remember listening to games from Chicago, games from all around the Saskatchewan Junior League, other games in the Manitoba Junior League. I just listened to a lot of hockey games and really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Saturday Spotlight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest this Saturday is Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. So you go to Saskatoon, like you mentioned, but there your role is a little bit different. It's not only as a broadcaster, but you're also the assistant general manager of the Saskatoon Blades. The head coach, if I'm correct, when you went there, was current Jets director of amateur scouting Marcel Como.
He came after I was there.
After you were there, okay.
And they beat us in a sudden-death playoff game to make the playoffs. He was with Calgary at that point in time, the junior team in Calgary, and they beat us in a playoff game. I think it was 8-7, a game that never seemed to want to end. And they made the playoffs, and we didn't. So, and his contract was up at the end of the year. And we figured if you can't beat him, have him join us. And yeah, he joined us.
So you go to Saskatoon. How did you get into being into the front office role? You're the assistant general manager there in Saskatoon. How did that come to be?
When I went back to Saskatoon, I did radio television. I did, as my time before in Saskatoon, was radio television as well. But we did everything. I did snowmobile races, volleyball, junior football at the Saskatoon Hilltops. We did a fair bit of play-by-play, horse racing, you name it. The snowmobile ones might have been the most fun. But and then we were on a West Coast trip, and a gentleman by the name of Daryl Lubinecki, who I'm still very, very good friends with, and who I have tremendous respect for. We just went out for a walk, and it was kind of a rainy day on the West Coast, and he had just taken over. There had been a major shakeup, a major change in Saskatoon in the ownership and the management of the team. And he said to me, look, I can't do this by myself. I need some help. Would you come and work for me? And, it was different then. Even in television, you didn't have the access to highlights the way you do now. You don't have the live games that you do now. Maybe if it was in today's situation, maybe I wouldn't have made that decision. I'm not sure, although I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed my time. So I said, sure. So I made the flip, and I got out of broadcasting for a few years and did marketing, sales, just whatever had to be done, travel arrangements, whatever needed to be done. I was more than willing to help out and do it. And that's where I really learned a lot about junior hockey. and hockey in general.
By all means, correct me if I'm wrong, but were you even the assistant coach in 1982-83?
No, I coached a couple games.
You coached a couple games, okay.
Because Daryl Lubinecki got into a scrap with another coach in the league. And it was funny because later on the two of them became very good friends. And so he got suspended. And there wasn't the assistant coaches that you know that you have now.
Yeah.
And I coached three games. I think my record was 2-1. So that was fun. I mean, that was certainly interesting. Was I qualified? Absolutely not. And, you know, running a bench is one thing. Running practices and that is totally a different thing. But it was, again, just something that I'll always remember, and watching for flying pucks and flying sticks and those sorts of things. And then, you know, I just went back. And then as time wore on, then we got the – and this is always the, you know, the year and the time frame to me professionally that – that really was a change. I mean, I got married in Saskatoon and that, so that'll always be special. And then 89, we had the Memorial Cup. We opened up the new building in 88, and I remember we outdrew the Vancouver Canucks. Now, the Canucks were struggling a little bit. We had 10,000 plus or whatever at our opening night in Saskatoon. We added extra seats, and we had this argument or this battle with the city because they wanted Hockey Canada to open up the building. And we felt that we deserved the right to open up the building. So they kind of moved things up. Hockey Canada had a game on the Saturday. They moved things up, so we played Friday and Sunday and drew very, very well. But that really was the springboard for me, because then we had the Memorial Cup in 89, which I was chairman of.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of where everybody in the National Hockey League got to know who I was. I got to know better who they were. And, you know, down the road, it was certainly beneficial.
What do you remember about that 89 Memorial Cup? The Blades lost in overtime to Swift Current. Is that right?
Yes. Here's the thing leading up to it. And I think people that have ever been involved in an event will know exactly what I'm talking about. How busy you are and how the rest of your life gets put on hold. And then when it's all over, you really appreciate everybody around you, especially in my case, my wife Bev, who, I mean, I wasn't home very much. And it was just go, go, go. You had meeting after meeting after meeting. We had a great group of volunteers in Saskatoon, great committee, great people that I worked with, which was a huge benefit. But then when it ends, you wake up the next morning, and the final was on a Saturday afternoon. And so we all went out for dinner on Saturday night after it was all over. And, you know, enjoyed and celebrated a bit, despite the fact we had lost in the final. You wake up Sunday morning with nowhere to go. And I understood later when they were talking about Olympics, how they would have people on staff to help those people, because those people needed somebody to talk to and to come down off the high that you were on because of the Memorial Cup. And it was a great event. It was an event that we took it to another level. And, again, with just a terrific group of people around us. And Marcel Como was part of that team, and we had a great team. I mean, we had lots of character, and we lost in overtime in the final to Swift Current. And the thing that I was doing radio by this time. I'll go back quickly here, and I'll keep this short. Sometimes I ramble
That's
on here.
That's okay. Ramble on.
Give me the time out here.
Yeah, keep going.
And when we opened up the building, Telecable in Saskatoon, and it's funny because Ken Volden, who was with Telecable, is now very high up with TSN, which is in Toronto, which is interesting.
Everything comes full
circle. Yeah, we played ball together, and he was a young snot-nosed kid, and now he's technically, I guess he could fire me if he wants. So
we'll bleep out the snot-nosed kid.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know what? That's okay. They wanted to televise the opening game in the new building, which was February of 1988. And the deal that our team made was, yes, you could televise the game, but Dennis has to do the play-by-play, and you have to pay him to do it. I think I got paid $500. I thought, wow, this is pretty good. And so I did the game, and one thing led to another, and the next thing you know, the ownership, the Brodsky family, came back to me and said, would you get back into play-by-play? And so I stayed working for the team, still did everything that I was doing, but I got back into broadcasting, and it was busy. So then the Memorial Cup rolled around, and the thing that I had to remember in the Memorial Cup final is, as heartbreaking as that overtime loss was, there was lots of people from the Swift Current Broncos who was listening, because our station in Saskatoon had a far, far wider range than what the one in Swift Current did. So there was lots of Swift Current fans listening to our broadcast. And I had to sound excited and happy for the Swift Current Broncos, even though, you know, our team had just lost in the final of the Memorial Cup. But it was a great event, absolutely a terrific event. And as I say, we took it to another level with the banquet, with the awards presentation, and everything else. We set attendance records, and it was really a good week.
Such a terrific event that you were named Executive of the Year in the WHL in 1989. What did winning that award mean to you?
Well, you know what? It was special. I joke about it now, and I shouldn't, because it was special. I remember when they had the banquet in Swift Current, we were still kind of preparing for the Memorial Cup, because they had the banquet kind of in a bit of a break in the playoffs,
okay,
or at the end of the regular schedule. And I didn't want to go to the banquet because I thought, you know what, I've got too much work to do. It's a quiet time. There's a few days here where there's nothing going on. I'm just going to stay home and get caught up on some stuff and those sorts of things. And they kept convincing me that I needed to be at this banquet. And so I kind of started to put two and two together that maybe something was up, and got there and got the award. It was special. You know what? I joke that when you do a proposal for the Memorial Cup, you can have a 40-page proposal, and all the teams, or most of the teams, are just going to go to the financial page. And they're going to see what the bottom line was and how much money they're going to make off this Memorial Cup. But no, it was, you know what? To me, the Western Hockey League is... I absolutely loved my time in the Western Hockey League, and this is a topic for another day. When I see the criticism that the CHL is getting now from some former players and those sorts of things, is there things that they could do differently? Certainly, but I don't think you would find, out of 1,000 players, I don't think you would find five that would say they didn't absolutely love their time in the Western Hockey League or the CHL. So, but again, that's a topic for another day. But
we might take you up on that topic on another day.
You know, we had a great memorial. Yeah, it is, because we've seen, you know, Rick Westhead and with TSN now in Toronto has done a lot of work. You know, Bill Berg's son Sam, I believe it is, has launched a lawsuit.
And he says that his grandfather's not speaking to him
anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, which is unfortunate. That's from both sides.
Sure.
You know what? The grandfather, I think, should understand where the youngster's coming from, and you know, they need to keep that internally a little bit. But regardless, it's a great league, and it was a great stepping stone for me.
Before we go to break, tell me, after Saskatoon, you go to Seattle and you go to Tri-Cities, and you're the general manager in both those locations.
Correct.
What was it like making that transition from assistant general manager to the big chair and to be the general manager?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And the opportunity to... And be in charge is too strong of a word, because you're never really in charge, although you kind of are. I mean, I always believed you, and this, again, this goes back to Daryl Lubinicki's thinking, that get good people and let them do their jobs, and don't interfere. And so that's where the being in charge kind of, I think, is an overstatement. But I got the phone call after one more year went by. Marcel Como left. He went to pro, went to New Haven. I stayed one more year in Saskatoon. Everything was running along smoothly with the building. We had 7,700 season tickets. Things were going very well. Daryl Lubinicki was looking after the hockey side. They went to a couple of WHL finals. All was good from that standpoint. And then Seattle got the Memorial Cup for 92. And then the Seattle Thunderbirds called me and said, hey, would you come out and... you know, and come work for us, and you can chair the Memorial Cup. You did, you know, it went so well in Saskatoon, and I remember there was a Hank Williams Jr. Kentucky Headhunters concert in Saskatoon that the ownership group of Seattle was kind of promoting. They were the promoting group for it, and a gentleman by the name of Russ Williams, who I still see and talk to, he lives in Florida now, was with the Seattle Thunderbirds. He was their president, and we were the ones that did the negotiations, and it was like, he wrote a number on a napkin, I wrote a number on a napkin, and we switched napkins. And we were fairly close. In fact, I think he was higher than I was.
which one did he honor?
Yeah, no, he honored his. And away we went. And it was good timing. The timing was really good. So I went to Seattle as assistant GM. Turned out we got a radio deal done when I got to Seattle, But we didn't have a play-by-play guy, so I ended up doing play-by-play for a couple of years. And then, but I did sales and travel, and I was more of the assistant GM than I was on the marketing and sales side. We had people that did a very good job on that. And then Peter Ranholt left after the Memorial Cup in 92, and they came to me and they said, would you be the general manager? And I said, absolutely. And jumped into that chair and, you know, had 2 great years at that. Tri-Cities was looking to make a change. I'd had a bit of a battle with my buddy Russ Williams over some things, and that, you know, were more player related than anything else. And so he said, Tri-Cities wants permission to talk to you. So I went, talked to them, and signed a 3-year deal with Tri-Cities as their general manager. And again, we went from, I think, 2,700 or 2,800 season tickets to 3,900 season tickets. We had a terrific year on the ice financially. We did very, very well. The team had been struggling a little bit financially. There was off-ice issues with the schools and the billets and those sorts of things that needed to get straightened out. We got all that straightened out. Again, I brought some people, a couple people in that some I knew, some I didn't. But you know, luckily, touch wood, put together a terrific staff. They were all good people, and we did a lot of good things in Tri-Cities and had a lot of fun. And unfortunately, at the end of the year, they wanted to hire somebody else. So after 1 year of my contract, I got called in, and or they came into my office and said, we're going to make a change at the top. And I looked around me, and I thought, okay, there's nobody who has the bigger office than I do, so you must be talking about me. And we parted ways. And again, that's a long story for another day, but enjoyed my time in Tri-Cities.
Let's head to break, Dennis. When we come back, we'll talk about Commissioner Bayak, and then we'll talk about your transition to the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday Spotlight featuring Jets broadcaster Dennis Bayak.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're in the midst of our Saturday Spotlight feature. Our guest in studio, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Dennis Bayak. Dennis, when we left off, you had been general manager for the Tri-City Americans. An ownership change. Got fired. An ownership change comes in. We prefer to say just a parting of the ways in that sense. And you become Commissioner Bayak of the West Coast
Almost.
Hockey. Almost.
Almost.
Okay. Fill me in. Of the West Coast Hockey League.
Yes. And it had 6 teams. One gentleman owned 3. It was a lot. 2 in Alaska, a couple in California, Idaho, might have even been 3 in California, because San Diego, I think, was in the mix yet, too. So anyway, I get a call, and I met with them, and by this time, I had gone to the NHL draft, and because I'd been let go, and I thought, you know what, I had a scouting trip planned for Alberta, and then I was going to go to the draft, so I thought, you know what, I'm going to get out of town and go. So we were in Edmonton, and when we were in Saskatoon, a player by the name of Colin Bauer, who, again, I still keep, you know, in touch with a lot, stayed with us. He moved in for 4 days and stayed for 2 years. And the son we never wanted. But no, joking. And so anyway, we're visiting them. And his mom and dad tell me that the Edmonton Oilers are making a play-by-play change. And they said, would you get back into broadcasting? And I said, well, I've got nothing else of the goal right now, so why wouldn't I?
Sure.
So I start the process there. The next morning, I get a hold of some people that I knew from days gone by that were now with the Oilers, found out who to get a hold of. Gentleman by the name of Fred Filthout was the gentleman at CFRN that I needed to touch base with. He was friends with a gentleman named Leon Brin that I worked with in Saskatoon, so we kind of connected everything together. And it was all going good, except Peter Pocklington had gone to Europe. He was the owner of the Oilers and needed his approval. In the meantime, I'd gotten a call from the West Coast Hockey League. They were looking to make a change, and they wanted a commissioner, and they were offering me the job. And so now I'm going back and forth.
Sure.
But we're delayed because it's not like today where you'd pick up a cell phone or whatever and it'd be done in a heartbeat. We got to wait for Peter Pocklington to get back from Europe. So time is going on, and I'm trying to stall these other guys at the same time. And then you talk about how things happen. They finally said, we need an answer. And I didn't blame them. They did need an answer. And said, we'll get a contract to you by Thursday at noon, and we want an answer by the end of the day. So But the Edmonton thing is not going to get cleared up until Monday or over the weekend. So I figure, well, I guess I'll just handle this however, we'll see what comes along. All of a sudden, I get a call saying, look, the person who was going to type up your contract, her son got sick at school. She has to leave. She won't be back in until tomorrow. We won't be able to get the contract to you till tomorrow afternoon. I said, okay, I'll have an answer to you by Monday. Okay, deal. So I bought myself a weekend. In the meantime, all worked out with CFRN, and I debated between the two. Sure. I mean, the other one was intriguing as well. And Bev said, you know what? Ever since you were a kid, you wanted to do NHL play-by-play. Why would you not pursue this? And she was right. So I pursued it, and off we went to Edmonton, and you know, had to battle for a financial settlement with my previous owner, and but on we went from there, and that was my first stint in the National Hockey League, doing Edmonton Oilers television for CFRN, and got really enjoyed that. But the commissioner's thing was funny. After 1 year in Edmonton, mm-hmm. they called me back and they said, are you okay with where you are? We'd still be interested in talking to you. And I just said, you know what? No, I think I'm happy where I am, and let's leave it at that. And again, after 1 year, I might have, that almost changed too, but, that's, you know, that's another chapter in the book.
So you're in Edmonton. Things eventually come about that you leave Edmonton.
CFRN lost the rights.
Okay.
Is what happened. I think it was called ITV at that time. I think it's whatever it is now.
Sure.
Global.
Yeah, Global or your City TV or whatever it is. Yeah.
Aspers, which...
Global would be Global. Aspers.
Yeah. Eventually, I think it became Global. Anyway, but they were only doing 11 games.
Okay.
So that wasn't going to work. I mean, CFRN was going to keep me on and have me just be one of their regular sports guys. But they certainly weren't going to let me go to another TV station in Edmonton and do hockey play-by-play, which they knew I wanted to. I still would have been doing some stuff for TSN. But anyway, so now all of a sudden I get a call from a company called Molestar, which owns all the broadcast rights for the Canadian teams. It's a brand. It was a branch off of Molson's.
Sure.
Since been turned, you know, gone.
Right. This is the early 1990s.
Correct.
Okay.
And so I get a call from, or mid-1990s, I get a call from Molestar, would you move to Toronto? And I said, yes, I would. And ironically, very shortly after that, I get a call from TSN saying, we are going more into doubleheaders. Would you be available? Would CFRN let you do about 12 doubleheaders for us? And I said, well, you'd have to talk to CFRN. They did, and CFRN never had a problem with it. But in the meantime, I ended up in Toronto doing Toronto radio,
sure.
but still did the TSN part.
Okay.
It all kind of worked together. And so I had 2 great years in Edmonton. And we all remember the Todd Marchant goal against the Dallas Stars.
Absolutely.
In overtime. And I wasn't doing play-by-play because it was the CBC doing play-by-play. But I was on the trip.
Sure.
And maybe one of the most enjoyable flights was when we left Dallas and flew to Colorado
I bet.
For the next series. But yeah, so it was off to Toronto from Edmonton. Again, very much enjoyed my time. Still have friends in Edmonton.
So you're in Toronto. What's the main difference between doing the job in Toronto versus Edmonton or some of the WHL cities you were doing it in?
Well, Toronto's Toronto.
Right.
And you know, we can in the West, we can all be critical of Toronto, and we have reasons to be and legit reasons to be. But from a work standpoint, and this is the time when everything was starting to open up. The Score was on board. Toronto Maple Leafs got their own television network going. TSN became more involved in everything.
Sure.
Rogers became more involved in everything. So there was all these opportunities. And So it worked out great for me. I did radio with Jim Ralph. I did anywhere from when Joe Bowen wasn't doing television, he came back and did radio. And so I think I did anywhere from 45 to 52 games a year for the Toronto Maple Leafs. No playoffs.
Well, it's the Leafs after
right.
all.
You know, that's another story. I remember when I was doing my contract. I was negotiating, and we were going back and forth about a playoff bonus, and I'm not sure how much time we wasted going back and forth on that playoff bonus, but it was a waste of time.
So what's the best way? I want to interrupt you there. So you've done radio in Edmonton, and you've done radio throughout the WHL, and you've done TV, pardon me, in Edmonton, and you come to Toronto, and you're doing radio. And now you do, here in Winnipeg, you mainly do TV, but you also do some radio. What's the difference between calling a game on radio versus television? How do you prepare for one versus the other?
I love radio. I absolutely, ever since I was a kid.
Back in Flin Flon.
Back in Flin Flon, even younger than that, listening to radio. I loved radio. And very early was something that I knew that I wanted to kind of pursue. You have to be more descriptive on radio. Anytime any young player, young broadcasters ask me about broadcasting, I tell them, just keep in mind that you have to paint the picture. You are the eyes of the listener. And you have to tell people where the puck is. You have to be more descriptive. And sometimes you can become too descriptive because the game moves so fast now. You can become too descriptive. So you kind of have to try and find that balance of describing what's happening, where the play is, and still make sure that you're up on the play. So those are the challenges there. TV, you can relax a little bit. You don't have to talk all the time. You can, if the puck gets cleared down the ice, you can pause for 4, 5, 6 seconds, and it really doesn't matter because people can see what's going on. And sometimes we still get too descriptive on TV. I mean, I know I do, and I sometimes catch myself when I say things like the puck is cleared down the ice. I say, well, people can see the puck got cleared down the ice. That's why the one guy's skating back for it. But regardless, you have to have a flow to the game as well.
Sure.
So you do have to be a little more involved. But that's the biggest thing, is just you have to be more descriptive and really have to be conscious of where the puck is, and so that the people listening on radio can really picture the game. I tape games, and I'll go back. I'll let them get out of my memory bank, and I'll go back and listen to them and make sure that that I can kind of see where the game is going. And that's so. But that's the biggest thing. I mean, the game is still exciting. I love the game, and from that standpoint, there's more people involved in a television broadcast. You've got people in your ear. You've got producers. You've got directors. In radio, if you want to do the mention something at the 2-minute mark of the first period, you can just do it.
Sure.
On television, chances are that your graphics department or your graphics person, Ryan Moyer, and the producer have gotten together, and they have built a graphic on what you want to talk about. So now you have to wait till they feel this is the opportunity, and this is the time we want to put that in. So that's how things change. You're not as much in charge on television as you are in radio, and you're dealing with more people, but both are fun.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is our Saturday Spotlight feature with Dennis Bayak, the voice of the Jets, Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, going through his entire career. So after you're with the Leafs, there's a time period when you're not broadcasting for a specific team, and you go to work for the Score, the old network that no longer exists. What was it like sort of moving away from covering a specific team, looking at the league in general, and maybe an opportunity to be a little bit more critical than you would be before?
No, I did both. I was still with my time with the Score.
Pardon me.
No, I still did. I still did all my Leaf stuff.
Okay.
And I got to go to. There was benefits of the Leafs not making the playoffs. I got to go to a couple of World Championships.
Sure.
In the late '90s, and I'll just touch on one other story. Two, actually, I should tell you. Would try and keep them rather quickly. The Seattle Memorial Cup got totally. Our schedule got totally shifted by the riots in Los Angeles, the Rodney King riots.
The Rodney King riots, okay.
Because Los Angeles was playing the Supersonics. So they made their schedule. We worked our games around what their schedule would be. And then when that happened, they canceled some games in L.A., and we had to reschedule some games in Seattle. So that was part of it there. But yeah, I did stuff at the Score. And then my last sportscast in Edmonton gets at CFRN gets interrupted by the news bulletin from CTV that Lady Di has been in a car crash.
Oh, God.
And I still have the tape of the news bulletin and that. And by the time I got home that night, she had passed away. So those two things that are not hockey related that will always stand out.
Sure.
So yeah, in Toronto, I did that. Went to work for the Score, which was lots of fun. And that's what I touched earlier, how things were just booming in Toronto. From a hockey standpoint, there was never enough. You could talk hockey 24/7 and just keep going. You know, Steve Koulias, Mark Osborne, Elliot Friedman, James Cebulski, all those guys were just young guys starting off in the business at the score and have gone on to bigger and better things. And it was just lots of fun. And, you know, really enjoyed that aspect of it. Did stuff for Leafs TV. I did Toronto Marlies when Leafs TV decided they were going to do Toronto Marlies games. We looked at my schedule. We fit in as many Toronto Marlies games as we possibly could. So I was flying from Boston to Rochester to Albany to Florida to rejoin the Leafs. And but again, all tons of fun. And, you know, and then things started to get a little up in the air in Toronto. With the broadcast rights being up and the new ownership group in Toronto, and then the opportunity came to Winnipeg.
Well, let's talk about Winnipeg. Who called you about the job in Winnipeg?
When I was going through Winnipeg the week before it got announced, I was visiting my niece and her husband and their two little boys and some other relatives that I have here in Winnipeg. And that's when they were playing hockey in the streets at Portage in Maine. And the rumor was out there that the Winnipeg Jets were going to buy the Atlanta Thrashers, that True North was going to buy Atlanta.
Stephen Brunt publishes that article in the Globe and Mail. Yeah,
and
remember
so
the name well.
We were on our way to Kelowna, where I spend the summers.
Right.
And so we go to Kelowna. Now, I'm in Kelowna watching the news conference in the morning. And there had been some conversation between our station in Toronto and some people here in Winnipeg about where things were going with the broadcast rights and that sort of thing, but really nothing, you know, nothing formal, nothing that, you know. And then, so I'm watching that and thinking, you know what, that would be, you know, that's an interesting situation. What's going on in Winnipeg? You know, I'm from Manitoba. This would be interesting. But at that point in time, we didn't know where the rights were going to be, the radio rights. So
sure.
I touched base with both parties, covering my bases and just was kind of inquiring as to what was going on. And so everything just kind of was put on hold, saying, look, that's all going to get negotiated. That's all going to get straightened out. And we'll keep you informed. So now we're going down to Washington, the state of Washington, to visit some friends. And my cell phone rings, and it's the TSN number. And it's Paul Graham from TSN saying, would you move to Winnipeg? And I said, am I applying? Or he said, no, if you want the job, it's your job. We think we're going to get the television rights. We want to sign a long-term deal with the Winnipeg Jets. And if you're okay with it, we'd love to have you go and move to Winnipeg and be our broadcaster. So there was never any doubt. My answer immediately was yes, for a couple of reasons. One, there was some uncertainty in Toronto. But more importantly, I think to come back to Manitoba, where I was born and raised, I think was something special. To be in on the ground floor of the return of the Winnipeg Jets, I think was something special. And it's been everything that I thought it would be and more.
Anything surprise you about the Winnipeg market that you didn't expect when you came back?
Not really. I think I expected the passion to be there, maybe not to the level that it is. And maybe the biggest surprise was the nice winter we had that first year.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget opening weekend when, I mean, it was like plus 30.
Yeah.
Everybody's walking around in shorts and golf shirts and the game against Montreal. And I got the opportunity a couple days earlier. 17 Wing offered us the opportunity to go up in a CF-18. And Sarah Orleski and I took them up on the offer. And I went up in the morning. She went up in the afternoon. I mean, I debated about it. And then I thought, what are you debating about? You'll never get this opportunity again. And went up for 45 minutes and did some twirls and some loops and didn't spill my breakfast. And, and all was good. But then just you'll never forget. You guys were there. You'll never forget that opening day.
Right.
That opening game. And I remember the preseason game against Columbus, and Brian Engblom and I talked about it on Tuesday in Columbus on our broadcast about that was our first preseason game because Grant Clitson at that time was playing for Columbus.
That's right.
So he was in the building playing for the Blue Jackets, and that was our first game. And the old adage, you get one chance to make a first impression. And I remember Brian Engblom and I talking about it, that there was some pressure on us that first night.
You could feel it?
We could feel it from a broadcast standpoint, not from a team standpoint,
no.
Not from any other standpoint, because everybody understood with the team it was preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Half the team was in Columbus. Half the team was here. But from our standpoint, we felt there was some heat on us. There was some pressure on us to perform and to show that, hey, this is what we are going to bring on TSN Jets. And it went well, and it's gone well ever since. And then Shane Knighty joined the crew. I've been really lucky to work with Brian Engblom, Mike Johnson, and Shane Knighty. I mean, three guys that are prepared, know the game, understand television, and it's made my job just a lot easier. And it's been great.
I think I can speak for all Jets fans when we say that we tremendously enjoy your broadcasts, both on TV and on radio. Of course, Dennis, I'm going to let you go on this last question. You mentioned that throughout your career, you've done numerous other sports besides hockey: curling, football, horse racing, baseball, volleyball, basketball, and snowmobile races. If you could broadcast one sport besides the game of hockey, what would it be? What event would you put you want to mark your name next to?
Well, and maybe this is strictly from a travel and a lifestyle, baseball or golf. Because baseball, you're in the same city for 4 days.
Sure.
Or 3 days. You go there, you settle in, you're at the same hotel. But from people that have been on the golf circuit, they say that's absolutely the best gig going, because you come in on Tuesday and you get yourself ready for the tournament. The weather's always nice because the golf tournament's on, so obviously the locations are great. And then you're done the golf tournament on Sunday. Monday, you get the opportunity to play the golf course. maybe even earlier in the week, you get a chance to play a couple games of golf, a game that I love, should be better at, but yeah. I'm not. So maybe that would be it. I mean, I love football. I love the excitement of football and the action that sport brought. But again, this is looking back, because I've never thought of doing anything else on a full-time basis other than hockey. But I think maybe for the lifestyle and for the climate and everything else, baseball and golf would be two that would be fun.
Dennis Bayak is the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3. You hear him on TSN 1290 as well. Dennis, appreciate this time. This has been a fascinating insight into a terrific career.
You know what? I've been lucky. I've been blessed. I have zero regrets. Any of the moves I've made, whether it was my choice or not, everything has worked out for the best. And I think the key to me is the people that I have met and the people that I still associate with. Going for dinner tonight with some friends that Gary scouted for us when I was in Seattle. And, I've been able to maintain those relationships. Don McGilvery, when I was with Tri-City, scouted for us.
Sure, Winnipeg Blues.
Still see him on a regular basis, and we chat. And I think that's the cherry on the ice, on the cake in what I've done, is the people that I've met and the people that I've still maintained friendships with. It's been absolutely great.
I'll leave you with this one quote from St. Louis Blues head coach Ken Hitchcock. He said that upon seeing you, he remarked, "I tell people you could make a funeral march sound interesting."
Yeah, Hitch is a liar. No, you know what? that's back to the Western Hockey League days. And that's the great part, whether it's referees. I remember when I was general manager. I know I'm taking up more time
that's
now.
That's okay.
I remember when I was general manager, and I still laugh with the referees now. My back door in Tri-Cities of my office was right across the hallway from the referee's room. And if I didn't think things were going good, I'd stand in the hallway with my arms crossed and this glare on my face. And I'm not sure what I was trying to accomplish, because I accomplished zero. And we still laugh with the Kelly Sutherlands and all the referees, the Brad Watsons and the Mike Hasenfratzes and the Brad Myers and the Mark Wheeler, the linesman, and that we still laugh about those days, because we all grew up through the Western Hockey League, to see them in the National Hockey League now I'm as thrilled for them as I am for what's happened to me.
Dennis Bayak, thank you very much for doing this and joining us this afternoon on Saturday Spotlight.
Drew, thanks for your time. I know I probably kill more at the time than you guys
well
want
worth
to kill,
it.
But
hey,
so be it.
The alternative was to hear from Richard and Ezra. And
good
wants
point.
That.
You know what? That's a real good point.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Drew,
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Big thank you to Dennis Bayak, voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and on TSN 1290, for joining us for the Saturday Spotlight interview. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN 1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. When we come back, we are going to look around the NHL and talk about both the San Jose Sharks and the Philadelphia Flyers as they continue to struggle. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast.
Catch the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.